From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made during the Capitol riot last week when observers noticed a trend. A number of rioters were wearing a skull symbol, recognized as the symbol for Marvel Comics' anti-hero known as the Punisher. The character debuted in the 1970s, with Frank Castle becoming the Punisher, a comic book character that is willing to use torture and violence to achieve his goals. He is, to put it mildly, not all that much like some of the classic comic book heroes that we might think about, Batman, Captain America, Thor, others. Well, now with so many rioters using the Punisher logo, Marvel is facing calls to retire the character or at least the logo. Writers on past Punisher lines have said that Marvel has to make some kind of a statement disavowing the use of the logo in this way. So far, Marvel has not commented from what I have seen. Yahoo tried to contact Marvel yesterday and got no response yet. Some critics say Marvel has more than just two options here. Instead of ignoring the rioters or dropping the comic line entirely, they say that Marvel can use storylines and characters to push back. The world of comic book heroes has expanded in more diverse ways in recent years, with traditionally white characters seeing new names and faces wearing their duds. Spider-Man's just one example, with Miles Morales taking over the role in some timelines about a decade ago. Morales is a character of Black and Puerto Rican descent. So what should Marvel do right now with Punisher? And what else should they do going forward? Our guests have a lot to say on these questions, and I'll welcome them now. Chris Thompson is a writer, engineer, comedian, and activist. And the reason we have this conversation, I saw some of his remarks on The Punisher, thought they were very interesting. Nice to have you back. Thanks for being with us, Chris.
Thank you. Great to be back.
Anthony Pierce is the co-director of the Wakanda Alliance in Buffalo. Anthony, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, how's it going? Appreciate to be here.
Why don't you tell us what the Wakanda Alliance is?
Sure. So, yes, I'm from Buffalo, New York. The Wakanda Alliance is a family reading comprehension workshop, and we highlight the cultures of the African diaspora and talk about how they have a presence in the past, the future, and the present, and how all those come together and can be used to create wonderful stories like the Black Panther and like so many other titles out there as far as comics, animation, and movies go.
What was the first comic that you loved, Anthony?
Oh boy. The first comic, So like, the first hero I loved from the comics was a character named Static Shock. And Static was a Black teen. Pretty much was a version of he was like Spider-Man, right? He was a teenager who was goofy but smart, intelligent, and he looked like me. He had locks and brown skin, and he grew up in a decent neighborhood. It wasn't terrible, but he was also met with some gang violence and things like that. And at first he wanted to kind of get down and like make a difference one way, but he ended up getting superpowers and taking another way. So he took on the great power, great responsibility role. So that was my first comic character that I loved.
Well, what about you, Chris Thompson?
So I was very basic, and I loved Spider-Man and X-Men. I loved Spider-Man because he was a geek just like me. And I loved X-Men because they were all outcasts, which was kind of like what I felt like growing up, especially when I was like really young. My elementary school and my middle school were all white. I was the only Black kid, and it wasn't fun sometimes. Mm. So I kind of identified with the troubles that the X-Men would have, like, just in day-to-day life. A lot of the cosmic stuff I wasn't into, but a lot of the social commentary that was in there, I did identify with.
I want to ask both of you, before we really talk about what we were seeing at the Capitol riot and this sort of the controversy right now, how popular is the Punisher, and how much have you been into the Punisher? Chris Thompson, I'll start with you.
So personally, I hadn't been into the Punisher until about the turn of the century, like early 2000s. I picked up a couple of Punisher things because it wasn't my vibe. It was, you know, he was too violent. And that's like saying something for like comics, like where you're seeing people like get evaporated by lasers. Like he just goes in and he punishes. He like tortures and kills all his enemies. He doesn't have too many like arch nemeses that like last longer than a couple of issues. So I wasn't into him back then, but then, like, you know, when I was younger, but like when I got older and they kind of like fleshed out his story a little bit more, I still wasn't too into what he did, but I was more open to like the depth of the character.
Why is that?
Mainly because like it wasn't, they didn't make it, I think it was a little bit more shallow, like back in the 70s and 80s, where he was just going in and he was killing mobsters and that was the end of it. In the early 2000s, you know, they gave him like a deeper backstory. He was like a non-vet in one version. He was an ex-cop. He was fighting corruption and he was doing it his way. And like in his mind, the only way that he could resolve like these issues that people had was to get rid of the main problem. And like, he wasn't just killing to kill. He wasn't on a, well, yeah, he was killing to kill sometimes, but like it was less a revenge arc and more of like, well, these people are hurting innocent people and I'm going to punish those people hurting innocent people.
I mean, to me, and forgive my lack of pop culture knowledge, is that sort of in the realm of Dexter as a character?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, honestly, yeah. Because, yeah, Dexter kills other serial killers. It's like he was scratching his itch. I think the difference between Dexter and the Punisher is that Dexter, like in the books and in the TV show, Dexter was always hungry for murder, and it took someone to guide him. Whereas the Punisher wasn't really hungry for murder until someone destroyed his life.
What about you?
I think those are the two different.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Anthony, what did you, you know, sort of make of the Punisher as you became interested in these different genres? I mean, has it been something that you've dug at all, or has it not been central for you?
Yeah, I would say that looking at the Punisher, crossing that line that a lot of heroes won't cross, I think that was his edge in the early 90s and throughout his publication. Because like, for example, you see the Batman, right? And the Joker's killed how many people throughout the whole world, Gotham and all that, and all these criminals who seem to get away and they just get locked up and they do it again. And so it's like, it was kind of cool to see how someone would break that cycle, because it's like, in the real world, does that entirely work? Does it work to just lock up criminals? No, some people have to be put down, at least from the Punisher's eyes. So I think that was a different take, especially with like the 80s, because the 80s just got real gritty in film too. You have films like RoboCop, Judge Dredd, where people could be shown being blown up, right? And you see like the grindhouse films where there's like skin being melted and deteriorated and all that stuff. So I think that carried into the 90s a lot, where comics got a little more out there and could be a little more less censored.
Yeah, so, I guess yeah. This is exactly why I was never really into the Punisher, I'll be honest. But having said all that now, this is a character that has endured since it debuted in 1974. There have been multiple movies, and the logo is just a skull symbol. I mean, Anthony, has that been the logo for a long time with this character? It seems like it has.
Pretty much, yes. I think since his inception, that the skull has been, you know, it's been shaped a little bit differently throughout the publication, but he's always had it like present, because whenever he's around, it's a big skull too. It's not just like a little patch. It's like covering his entire t-shirt or his entire back. So yes, it's been used as his calling sign and his calling card, especially when he shows up to the gangsters or to the mobsters or whatever. You know, the first thing you're going to see is that glowing skull and then a black outfit.
And so I want to talk about what happened last week at the Capitol riot with a number of rioters who were wearing anything from tactical gear with the Punisher logo on it to American flags with the Punisher logo on it to shirts with the Punisher logo on it. And so there's a few things that come to mind here, and I really kind of want to work through some themes here. And then we're going to talk about what you guys as fans of comics, but also critics, want Marvel to do. One of the first things that comes to mind for me is that if you read writers like Caitlin Flanagan, who have sort of mocked the rioters as, you know, she's described them as losers, as cosplayers, LARPers. I mean, I get the idea of looking at some of the more extreme characters who showed up in the Capitol as cosplayers, LARPers. But at some point, even cosplayer LARPing becomes real life if you move it in a certain direction. So even wearing a Punisher logo and dressing up in certain gear might be kind of in the realm of cosplay or LARPing, live action role playing. But if you break through a window and invade somebody's space and threaten to kill them and actually trample some people to death and kill a cop and start, I mean, like, at some point it blurs into reality. So I don't, you know, sort of just take the criticism of, oh, well, of course they're wearing the Punisher. That was all LARPing or role-playing. You know, that was all cosplaying. That wasn't serious. To me, that's not an indication that it wasn't serious just because they're wearing comic book logos. Chris Thompson, what do you think?
I think it was very serious. Aside from the clothes, what it indicates to me, if anybody at those riots was wearing a Punisher skull and doing those types of things, then they either did not read any of the Punisher, like, since the 70s, or they read it and got a very shallow view. It was like, oh, well, he's killing people, and I'm punishing people, so that's what I'm going to do. So, like, yeah, they're LARPing, and it is very serious what they did, but what they're also grossly misinterpreting what the Punisher was about, even in the 70s. So, yeah, it's frustrating because it's kind of like what they did with, like, Pepe the Frog. It's like, you know, Pepe was just like this weird comic about a frog that looked high all the time, and they turned it into their symbol. And then the creator killed off Pepe the Frog because of it. You know, they're doing the same thing with the Punisher. They're taking, like, the basic things without reading any of the context and you know, just appropriating it.
Well, and to your point, Chris, let me go ahead and read what celebrated comics writer Garth Ennis said about this. He had just reading from Yahoo's reporting on this, Garth had a well-received run writing for the comic in the early 2000s, and he has criticized those who view the Punisher sort of molding them for whatever reasons they want. He said, quote, "I've said this before a couple of times, but no one actually wants to be the Punisher. What they actually want is to wear an apparently scary symbol on a T-shirt, throw their weight around a bit, then go home to their wife and kids and resume everyday life. They've thought no harder about the Punisher symbol than the half-wits I saw at the Capitol, the ones waving the stars and stripes while invading our Capitol building," end quote. And so when he says no one wants to be the Punisher, I think what he's saying there, Chris, is if you actually know what this character is about, that is not something to emulate and wish for yourself. And that is misunderstanding the entire purpose of what the character is, which I think just tracks with what you're saying here. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, even Frank Castle didn't want to be what he became. And, like, and this is another thing. Garth actually, like, got into his own mental state and how he was fighting with himself, even though he was killing all these people. He was fighting with himself all the time. So, you know, this is a depth that people who just, like, throw a skull on and try to intimidate people don't understand. And, you know, it's probably, I can't say I'm surprised, because they did the same thing. Like I said, they did the same thing with Pepe the Frog. Hell, they did the same thing with, like, Norse mythology and Norse culture. They appropriated it and then made it into, like, you know, you know, this whole mythology of a superior race, when, like, half of these Norse gods, if you look at actual Norse mythology, probably would have butchered all of them for being not bright.
Right. And yeah. So, Anthony, let me ask you about that as well here. I mean, first of all, were you surprised to see rioters wearing the Punisher logo and gear?
It wasn't too much of a surprise, because I've seen how, like, the Blue Lives Matter has worked over the past few years, and I've seen cars that have both the Blue Lives Matter flag and the Punisher logo. I've seen the Blue Lives Matter flag within the Punisher logo. I've seen officers with the Punisher logo, either if maybe not on their vehicles, but maybe on their uniform or somewhere or another, or some type of patriotic symbol alongside the Punisher symbol, which is a juxtaposition to me, because the Punisher, he's not really a team player. Like, he's not going to team up with Spider-Man in most cases. Right. He's not going to be the good guy. He's going to play by, if he teams up with people, he has to, like, they tell him not to kill anybody, you know? And he's hated by cops. Like, most of the cops want him dead because he makes their job terrible because of all the paperwork. But he doesn't listen to authority either. And that's like the opposite of what an officer is supposed to do. It's the opposite of what a soldier is really supposed to do. Like, if no matter what you are, you have a code you have to follow, and then you also have an authority to answer to. And that's how, for the most part, you keep order. And Frank Castle doesn't really follow any of that. So why wear that logo? Your job is to protect and serve, for the most part. You're not supposed to go around punishing people. And if you call yourself a Christian, if you want to take it to that level, it's not your job to judge and punish. It's not your job to kill. You know, so for people to call themselves patriots and Christians, but also wear this logo and think of themselves as somebody who can deal out that hard justice, like, that doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I want to hear what both of our guests think that Marvel ought to do in response to this. And there's already a lot of pressure and ideas coming from past writers of The Punisher, from fans. But before we do that, I've got some phone calls to take for folks who want to weigh in on some of these themes. And so let me work through them. Mike in Walworth first. Go ahead, Mike.
Hello. Geez, great topic. And watching the events of the last 4 years, it becomes quite easy to understand how people can be radicalized. And, you know, we see a lot of the discussion about Muslim terrorists being radicalized. Well, there's really no difference between a domestic terrorist and a domestic terrorist waving a flag. They're dreamers and live in a fantasy world with false bravado. And it's easy to see how people get radicalized by following some sort of an ideal or a doctrine by somebody that they perceive as a strong leader.
Well, I appreciate the thoughts there. Mike, Chris Thomas, you want to jump on that?
Right, yeah. I think that, you're totally right. People can get radicalized really quickly just by an image alone. And I don't know, maybe it's like a pirate symbol, you know, like the pirate with the crossbones and everything. I don't know why that's been like a thing that kind of triggers something within people, that there's like a pursuit of death or a pursuit of violence of some level. And it's just like, again, it's the opposite. The character is the opposite of what they're supposed to believe in order to build a community or, you know, rectify the traumatic things that have been done in this country. It's like if you wear a T-shirt that says legalize it, but you've also arrested young men and women for having more than a weed crumb under their cuticle, right? And it's like, why would you use this for? I just don't get it.
Yeah.
It's also like saying, like, the Black Lives Matter movement, it's calling that a terrorist movement, you know, and just like that fear that somebody's going to take over what you have. So in order to correct that, you use ultimate violence. Why not look into the people's issues of what they're really going to, and then don't silence them when they bring them up, especially when there are entire libraries based on these very issues that you could easily just access through this powerful thing we call the internet. So for people, but again, mob mentality is just so easy for people to fall into. We see it on the internet all the time. A picture's worth a thousand words, and, you know, people kind of just fall in line with what other people are saying, because it's a knee-jerk reaction to whatever they're seeing and whatever they're hearing. And then, of course, brainwashing and privilege and all these other things that are present within our society that make people so easily to be moved and radicalized.
Chris Thompson, you want to add to that? You might be. There you are. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think Anthony covered everything I would have said. Like, this is how, and even the caller, you're right. Like, these people with this false bravado, it's this like hyper patriotism that radicalizes them. And it is not much different than like terrorists in the Middle East. There's like hyper bravado. There's a mythology that they're fed and that they feed themselves, honestly. And they just keep getting more and more extreme to the point that we see what we see in the streets, you know, last week, where they're literally breaking down they're tearing down the edifice that they claim to love so much because they think it's being infiltrated.
Well, let me get back to your phone calls. In Prattsburg, this is Scott next. Go ahead, Scott.
Evan, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
It jogged my memory with Marvel Entertainment and Marvel Comics. I was reading Dr. Shulkin's book. It shouldn't be this hard to serve your country. And he mentions a character named Ike. Ike is Isaac, and I'll try to pronounce his last name, Perlmutter,
yep.
Yeah, thank you. He is the CEO of Marvel Comics and one of the club goers of the 20 people that President Trump consults with. In Shulkin's book, he called them the politicals. Bernie Sanders told them off to the side that they were kind of ill repute. So I think there's more behind the scenes that's really driving that logo. And just saying, I know, it just jogged my memory, and I just had to make that comment.
Yeah, and Scott, I was not aware until your call, and I appreciate the call, some of the connection there. So just reading a little bit more background on what Scott's bringing up here, Business Insider reports that Isaac Perlmutter, CEO of Marvel, is friends with Donald Trump and reportedly was his top advisor on the Department of Veterans Affairs. Perlmutter has a $4.5 billion fortune that he spent. He bought a $200,000 annual membership to Mar-a-Lago. He's bought some New York City real estate with the Trump name on it. So, I mean, I don't know if that changes any of the sort of the calculation. Chris, I'll start with you. I mean, does that change anything with pressure on Marvel or how fans feel about Marvel?
I don't know if it has much to do with how fans feel about Marvel. I know of Ike Perlmutter, not the greatest guy, and don't quote me on this specifically, but I believe he was the guy who was okay with like Terrence Howard being replaced with Don Cheadle in the Iron Man movies, and his reason was because nobody would be able to tell the difference.
Oh, yeah.
And if anybody knows what Terrence Howard looks like and what Don Cheadle looks like, you can definitely tell the difference. So he's not the greatest of guys. Mm. Now, whether there's like some sort of pushing regarding the character Punisher that Ike Perlmutter is doing to like, you know, more push the brand and push that skull as something of some sort of pseudo-patriotism, I really don't know, but I don't know how much he is involved in the writing process because, like, under his watch, there's been a lot more diversity in Marvel.
Hmm.
Like, we have a Black Spider-Man. Like, the writers are the ones creating this stuff. So we have a Black Spider-Man. We have a more diverse cast of, like, Avengers. There's a female Thor now. There's, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy. It's more than just like weird aliens and stuff. You know, there's humans on there now. I know that's not exactly diversity, but it's a little bit more. Everything's gotten a lot deeper. Like, you know, we've got Muslim American superheroes now. We've got, you know, a lot more Latino heroes. We've got like a lot more women heroes with their own stories that aren't just being used to push a narrative. So if he has something to do with this one specific character, you know, it's completely possible, but I don't know if he cares enough beyond, you know, his bottom line, his money.
Okay, interesting. And go ahead, Anthony.
That,
yeah.
Yeah, and to build on that, the writers of The Punisher in 2018, 2019, volume 12 of The Punisher, issue number 13, for the comic people who know how to, you know, trace down comics, there was actually a scene where, you know, Punisher, he's walking at night. He just murdered a dude for almost raping a woman. And the cops pull him over, stop by, and they're like, hey, what are you doing? Yeah, they start questioning him, and then they see the skull on his chest, and like, oh, it's him. It's like they see a hero. And they're like, most of the guys hate you down at the station, but some of us are behind you. We like what you do, and we want to help the movement, right? So they're like fanboying out. And he sees the sticker on their car. He's like, what the hell is that? And he goes next to it, and he peels it off and rips it off in front of him, and basically tells him, like, you're not who I am.
I've got the quote. You want me to read it? Exactly.
Yeah, go for it.
He rips it off. He rejects their hero worship, ripping their prize decal to shreds, and says, I'll say this once. We're not the same. You took an oath to uphold the law. You help people. I gave all that up a long time ago. You don't do what I do. Nobody does.
Does. Yep. You boys want a role model? Yep. His name is Captain America. He'd be happy to have you. and he has that. If I find out you're trying to do what I do, I'll come for you next. So, yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, that's where I wanted to ask you both then. Before I get back to phone calls, and if you're on the phone, Peter, Nico, we'll grab you in just a second.
Sure.
But, Anthony, you bring up the fact that plot line has already come up, or at least that dialogue interaction between the Punisher and police officers. But beyond that, if you are running Marvel Creative right now and you've got this pressure because rioters at the Capitol are using this logo to sort of spread whatever image they want, and, they're even past writers of the Punisher saying, you got to do something. What do you do? Yeah. Is it about plot lines? Is it about shutting it down for a while? Is it about the logo? What do you do, Anthony?
Yeah, that's a tough one because it's not like the Punisher isn't punishing crooked cops. But I don't think he's gone after cops who are specifically doing things like affecting, destroying the lives of brown and black people, right? So I think maybe if there was a team up with him and maybe a Luke Cage, maybe that would bring some light to some things, and maybe people would see a different side of society through that. But also Chris, my buddy Chris, he mentioned maybe make Punisher black. And I know we might get to the idea of race swapping, so to speak, maybe later in the show. But I wouldn't be totally opposed to that, but I don't think it's highly necessary. But yeah, so I think Marvel is in a weird position. I don't think they should take Marvel. I don't think they should take Punisher off streaming platforms. I don't think they should cancel the show or his comic at all. I think there is an opportunity to look into some deeper things, and maybe if maybe Punisher does go around killing cops, maybe then that won't be something as readily that people would take to as readily as they have been in the past.
Okay, Chris Thompson, what do you think?
So. I was kind of spitballing when I said, hey, why not just make the Punisher black? But then I thought about it. That actually might work, because I remember before the Captain America was like worshipped by these people who claimed to be patriots just as much. Mm-hmm. And then they made Captain America black. They made him Sam Wilson, who was actually Steve Rogers' best friend. And his first issue, he was beating the crap out of white supremacists.
Oh, yeah.
People hated it. People really hated it. And then I stopped seeing Captain America shields on people's pickup trucks a little bit more. So, I mean, maybe a storyline where even if Frank Castle isn't black, maybe he's going after Proud Boys or something. Or maybe he's going after, like, these 3%ers or any other white supremacist group that's been fomenting all this hate. Maybe he's killing them in the comic, and people will not be attracted to him anymore.
And this has been done a couple of times, real quick, to build off of what Chris said. This has been done a couple of times throughout not just Marvel, but DC as well. And DC, Superman fought the KKK. In Marvel, the Black Panther fought the KKK. So, that was used as, social commentary, and that's why I love comics so much, because they can do that, right? They can put that on a page and sell it, and it'll reach a wide audience, not just adults, where the adults are going to, like, watch what the adults watch, but also the kids, they might get a comic not knowing what to expect, and then, boom, you got something that relates to society so closely in that comic book.
I'm talking to Anthony Pierce and Chris Thompson. Anthony is co-director of the Wakanda Alliance in Buffalo. Chris Thompson's a writer, engineer, comedian, activist, both of them with a longtime love affair of comic books, but also a thoughtful critic's eye to how companies like Marvel are, you know, presenting their heroes, their anti-heroes, and now how Marvel is responding to the controversy in which a number of the rioters at the Capitol last week were wearing a skull logo related to Marvel Comics' The Punisher. There have been calls from past writers for Marvel to either shut it down or make a statement or create a plot line or do something with the logo. So we're talking about what entertainment companies can do. We're also talking about some of the dynamics in play for people who try to use that sort of imagery. And when we come back, we're going to take some more of your phone calls. I've got some emails to share as well for them on the other side of this only break. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, we bring you special programming to honor Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. In our first hour, MLK and the Fierce Urgency of Now unpacks the implications of the 2020 election through the modern-day lens of social justice movements. Then in our second hour, in April 1967, Martin Luther King Jr. gave a landmark speech from the pulpit of the Riverside Church in New York. He was assassinated a year later. We take a look at his last year. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Peter in Rochester is on the phone next. Go ahead, Peter.
Okay. It'd be really cathartic, I think, for everybody if we could have a fusion of the movie Munich meets Death Wish, and where the Punisher, who I'm really not even – I was always wondering what that mask was on these flags with the blue line and everything, where this guy does his thing and to Don and his mob. And then it turns out that the Punisher is
okay.
Whoa.
I don't think I was quite ready for that. Yeah, I appreciate it, I guess, Peter. Everybody's got ideas for where the comics are going to go. Let me just grab another phone call. Let's just go to Nico.
Yeah, no comment on that. No
yeah, let's go to Nico and Phelps to cleanse the timeline on this one. Go ahead, Nico.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a quick comment on sort of the emergence of, like, the Punisher Skull logo. Years back, if you guys remember the movie American Sniper with Chris Kyle, the Navy SEAL veteran,
mm-hmm.
I feel like
after
that movie, there was just this huge – I mean, you saw the skull everywhere. At the time, I was serving in the U.S. Army, and, all over base, you'd see it. It just gained all this popularity, and just kind of want to make that quick comment. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thank you, Nico. Chris,
that's very interesting. Yeah. Like, just in general, because like I'd been out of the military industrial complex with my career when that movie came out, so I wasn't really sure what was going on military bases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but Nico, we thank you for your service as well. And again, you know, seeing that logo on an officer, someone who answers to authority, again, I feel like it's juxtaposed to what they stand for. But I mean, things happen all the time in society, especially American society. You see something and you appropriate it and you kind of flip the meaning of it and kind of just take it as your own because it's what you saw in that moment or it's what people around you are seeing. So you're kind of just falling in line with that. But again, if they picked up the comic and read and understand exactly where the character comes from, it'd be a little different. But of course, you know, I totally get it because sometimes it's like that. It's like you're just seeing something that's in your environment and you're seeing that people are rocking it for a certain reason, and you just follow suit because that's what's cool. And then sometimes that's how the meaning gets lost. And it's understandable, but again, just knowing what's on your person and knowing what you're actually standing for and being sure that, you know, understanding the deeper context of what's going on is important.
Hmm. Let me get Brian in Fairport next. Go ahead, Brian.
Oh, hello.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
All right. So I just tuned into the show and you guys are reminding me of something. There's a Thor comic from, it says it's number 311 from 1981. I was reading this when I was a kid. And you've got this riot, you know, here on the cover it says in the inner city. And, you know, you've got Thor, you know, to be the hero. You've got, you know, kind of a hand, you know, armed combat between police officers that you can see that they come from different backgrounds. And it's about a child, I believe, that was, injured by, police, and then they're in the hospital. And the thing about this is, this is a comic book, and, Thor, his alter ego is he's a doctor. And so his job is to try to save this child's life, but then he ends up getting pulled out into the street to break up the, the fighting, right? And, one thing leads to another, and, ultimately the child dies, and then what it takes for everybody to quit their fighting is, the mother, the mother's pain. She just comes out and says, just stop it. That's not helping the situation. And I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about this one this year. 30 years plus since. And I just think, looking at each other as people, that's something that you can really get from some of these, some of these comics. And, kind of reminds me of the, that song, I hope the Russians love their children too, right? From Sting.
Yeah, yeah.
Just interesting, and I was glad that you were kind of looking at that, looking at that stuff today.
So, Brian, so thank you for the phone call. And I got bad news for you, Brian. 1981 is a full 40 years ago now, man. It's horrifying to say it, but it's true. But let me, I'm a little surprised, Brian, to hear, and this is maybe me stereotyping, that there was a nuanced look at these issues in the 1980s in a comic book. So interesting. But let me ask both Anthony and Chris. Anthony, I'll start with you. I mean, Brian believes that this medium can be a way to sort of advance social understanding and issues if you do it with care and nuance and not sort of stereotyping. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Absolutely. I think that, and it's not only, it's great that happened in the 80s and that you picked that up. But now we're getting into some deeper things because of, we have things like social media and we have more diversity in this country and in this world really than we've ever had before. So now we're starting to see stories come to the surface that are from the Black community, the Middle Eastern community, the Asian community, and they're coming into the entertainment industry and the Latino communities. And they're coming into the industry and being able to share their stories because, most of these industries were started by mostly white men. But now you're getting not just women, but also people across the gender spectrum, and they're adding in their perceptions of their experiences. And they can capture them in a really unique way. When you have a Black writer and a Black artist working together, circumstances just change a lot more. So, for example, if you see Spider-Man, he's walking around town and it's as his Peter Parker self, people aren't taking a second look. But for example, you have Miles Morales speaking on the phone with his mother, who is a Hispanic woman. He's speaking in Spanish, and now heads are turning, right? And people are looking at him. You might be somebody in the background looking differently at him. Now you're starting to see exactly what we go through when we're being ourselves and our joy is interrupted by somebody who looks at us as if we're less than what they are, or that we should, or that we don't belong. So I think that's what's happening in comics. That's what's happening across the industry as a whole. And that's important because how else do you get to know somebody without walking in their shoes? And you're not going to walk around in blackface, of course. So the next best thing you can do is watch a piece of material or read a piece of material that takes an inside look at someone's life. And then you can see not just what it's like for their pain to show, but also what it's like for their joy to show. And that's what makes our victory so much sweeter, especially as Black people. And Chris can definitely, fulfill this. That, everything we go through from witnessing slavery, seeing things as children, seeing Black pain in our communities and throughout time and space through novels and poetry and things like that. And then being able to transfer that into something creative for someone else to see, not just for our own people, but for people across the world. And it's really just, it speaks to where we are in our time as human beings on this planet.
Chris, you want to add to that?
Agreed. Again, Anthony took the words out of my mouth. But yeah, I agree with all of that. And going back to the comics, it's people find these things surprising, but like that comic in 1981, like he surprised me saying that that was in a Thor comic. But then when I think about it, comics have been dealing with like serious issues and they've been bringing up things like this for years. The first Black Green Lantern came about a couple of years after in a Green Lantern comic book, they actually had a Black woman ask Green Lantern, why doesn't he deal with things in the Black community? And then John Stewart came about. And then, like, you know, Aquaman's archenemy is a Black man who felt, like, disenfranchised by the government, you know. There's dealing with addiction. There's dealing with these type of relations. There's dealing with religious persecution. All of this has been happening since comics. And honestly, I think this is why, like, people were trying to like put so many binds on comics, like since there was a book called Seduction of the Innocent by an American psychiatrist whose name I forgot. Comics were destroying children's minds when really a lot of these comics were just like introducing so-called adult themes to children a little bit early, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well,
there's a lot to there's a lot that can be produced with comics.
Well, people
don't see the picture.
And on the subject of drawing and its power, I'm going to bring in a phone caller. Barbara's father was a cartoonist, apparently. Is that right, Barbara?
Oh wow!
Yes, he sure was. Tex Blaisdell, and he was from the early golden age of artists, and. He didn't have a strip of his own, but he worked on everybody's work. He did a lot of DC comics and then Marvel also. And growing up, you know, it was bizarre growing up because all these crazy artists were the family friends, you know, the quote uncles, unquote, you know. And in those days, of course, there were no aunties. Well, there were some, but not in our gang. And he worked a lot on not only strips, but also comic books, of course. And he did Bigfoot as well as Sirius, like Popeye all the way to Prince oh, wow. Valiant and all that. And but what my comment was is I remember back to the spirit.
Oh,
and,
wow.
He was a
character that he was a good guy, you know, but I often think of him when I watch the TV shows of today because, you know, the quote good guys, unquote, are forever kind of closing the door in the room and sort of, you know, threatening the perp or whatever to. And then everything turns out all right. And, you know, the spirit had a little bit of that going on, you know. so I guess you could say some things never die. But anyway, I'm just enjoying this entire conversation because people don't often talk about comics. And to tell you the truth, I think they're an underestimated resource. You know, it's literary for kids to learn how to read and, you know, they have their own little world of imagination and for the kids and all this. But I do feel bad if they're being used for ill because that's not the purpose of comics. Mm-hmm. Anyway, thanks very much.
Yeah,
and
thank
good luck, you guys.
Thank you, Barbara. I appreciate
thank
that.
You, Barbara.
I mean, great stories and thoughts there. And before I grab an email, just sort of building on Barbara's comment, I mean, I grew up with cousins who were really into it. And for a little while, I got really into certain comics. I loved when Image came out. I loved Spawn. I liked some fun weird stuff like Harbinger, and there was some cool stuff in the 90s when I was okay. It wasn't cool because I wasn't cool. I can't evaluate cool. but what is the most interesting thing that's out there right now to you? I'll start with Chris. What is really interesting or excites you the most right now on the scene?
Well, I'm I'm a couple of years behind this, but Ta-Nehisi Coates' run of Black Panther mm-hmm. is very good. He democratizes the kingdom of Wakanda, which I think is something that nobody ever thinks about. Like, he's a king. He's a he's technically a despot. And how is this affecting, you know, how is this affecting his country that he's going to off world and saving the world, but then he's not taking care of things at home, you know? So yeah. It was really good because not only I love Black Panther, but it humanizes him even more because these are things you got to think about. Like, I can't just go out and punch somebody and not face consequences. And this guy's doing that on a galactic scale. And what's happening at home? Like, he's still got to pay your bills. He's still got to make sure your subjects are, you know, are well fed, you know? So I love the Ta-Nehisi Coates, Black Panther, wholeheartedly.
Okay. Anthony Pierce, what about you?
And yeah, I mean, like I said, I help run the Wakanda Lions, and that's exactly what we talk about but also on a different level too, just like with the Black Panther, yes, he's a king, but then Wakanda as a whole, the technology. So kids are learning about science and physics also through the comics, because I know one of the other characters, his sister Shuri, she's the smartest character in all of Marvel Comics. She's smarter than Tony Stark. She's smarter than Mr. Fantastic mm-hmm. because this region of Wakanda has not only the resource of vibranium, but they've been able to stick to their culture and be secluded from the rest of the world when they were falling apart. So they were able to build a lot differently, and they were able to advance a lot more quickly. So imagine a country in Africa that wasn't colonized at any point in time and got to keep their technology, got to keep their culture, got to keep their science and their wisdom and their spirituality, and were able to develop and go beyond what the rest of the world was doing. And that's why, you know, we at the Wakanda Alliance developed that program, is so that kids can see that, you know, in this world where where we are mocked, where we are made to seem less than we're supposed to be or less than what we truly are, you know, and to see that in a comic and to think that that can prepare the new minds for the next stage that's after this generation. To really push and understand that we are beautiful people, all people of the world, no matter what ills or what conflicts that we have, we can still rise up and create beautiful things, create beautiful stories. So I think Black Panther is one of the titles to watch. The world is watching, you know, after breaking records worldwide, globally. Black Panther is the title to watch. There are also a lot of other titles that are outside of Marvel and DC. A lot of independent artists are out there doing their thing and telling those stories, like I said, from different backgrounds, whether it's Pacific Islander or East Asian or someone who's on a gender spectrum. Those stories are out there too. So really, and I know you said, Evan, that, you know, back in the 90s, maybe you weren't cool for being geeky or whatever, but now geek is the new cool. Right?
I'm with you. I think geek has always been cool. I just think I've never been cool.
I think you were cool, man.
I got no comment.
Well, let me close with this. I'm going to kick this to Chris, because Chris, you're the reason we had this conversation today. Charles mm-hmm. writes to us with a different perspective. Charles says Marvel shouldn't do anything about this. He says, no, Marvel shouldn't cancel anything. It's amazing to me that the ideology that has spent decades insisting we can't judge entire groups of people based on a few extremists is now demanding we do just that. Numerous military units, including mine, made up of honorable men, have utilized the Punisher's skull as their insignia. Telling them that what they've rallied around is bad, or that they're bad for rallying around it, is just going to make them angry. There are solutions for what led to the events of last week. Taking the attitude of, let's find more things conservatives like so we can cancel them, isn't one of them. That's from Charles. Chris, floor is yours.
Okay. I didn't say anything about canceling anything Punisher-related at all. I said that, you know what the ideals of the Punisher are, and I do understand that a lot of military units use the Punisher skull in their insignia, and sometimes just, you know, as part of a group. But we're not talking about that. We're not talking about the military. We're talking about actual white supremacists. And what I did say was that they should, you know, write the story so it's not appealing to those white supremacists. You know, by all means, if you want to put a Punisher skull on your insignia or wherever, by all means do it. But like, if the Punisher is going out and killing Proud Boys in the next issue and you're a Proud Boy, it's going to look silly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We will see what the next steps are in the books to come from Marvel on the Punisher. Chris Thompson, a writer, engineer, comedian, activist. Thank you, sir. As always, great talking to you.
Absolutely. I really appreciate it.
Anthony Pierce, co-director of the Wakanda Alliance in Buffalo. Wonderful having you on for the first time, and I hope you will join us again.
Sounds like a plan to me. Thank you, Evan. Appreciate you.
Chris and Anthony, great conversation. Listeners, a lot of great interaction this week. It has been a tumultuous set of weeks, and we're grateful that you're here in this community and your forum. No matter your background or where you come from, what you believe, we hope that we can come together to talk here. And we're going to do that next week. There's a lot going on, and we'll be right here with you. So for the entire team here, Rob Braden, engineer, Megan Mack, producer, I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice weekend. We will talk with you next week on member-supported public radio.